once again to Proverbial Perspectives. I'm Shahid Hamid, your host, this evening for what I believe is going to be a very, very important program, a very, very informative program. Tonight we're going to talk about transition and transitioning from incarceration to freedom. And we're going to look at some culturally specific programs that is making a tremendous contribution to the African-American community. Tonight I have as my guests Travis Gamble, Nate Roberts, Dorothy Steele, and they're from the Department of Community Justice of Multnomah County. And we're going to be talking about the African-American program that they are involved with, and invite your telephone calls right here at KDOO 90.7 FM. So we'll be having a discussion, and we will invite you to call with questions on the African American program and some of their activities in just a minute. So we'll be right back. Once again to Proverbial Perspectives. I'm Shahid Hamid, your host this evening. And again, we want to invite your telephone calls midway through the program. Our telephone number here is 231-8187. That's 503-231-8187. And I'd like to take this opportunity to welcome our guests this evening. Again, I have Mr. Travis Gamble, Nate Roberts, and Dorothy Steele, and they're with the Multnomah County Department of Community Justice. And they're involved in something very, very special, something very, very beneficial to the community. They're dealing with culturally specific types of rehabilitation efforts, and they are involved with the African American program, and this is of Multnomah County. So we're going to talk with these wonderful people and invite your telephone calls. And I'd like to pose a question right now to perhaps Nate Roberts, and let him lead off with how did you get a culturally specific program started with Multnomah County?
Well, Nate Roberts, I actually didn't start the program. I've been with the program for 5 years, 5 years and a month or so. I came along and started to work with the program in the transitional phase. But realistically, the program started in 1991. The research was in 1991 through 95, focusing on African-American men and their incarceration rate, how often they returned to prison. The program was started by a gentleman named Carl Goodman. Had counselors named Terrell Johnson, Harrison Danley. There was other people involved, multiple people involved in the beginning of it. And what they did is, after the research was conducted, they identified that African-American men returned to prison at a higher rate once they were released from prison. With that information at hand, I believe Carl was involved, charged with the task of starting a program to focus on addressing that issue, to identify a way to help these men with their culturally specific twists change their method of doing the supervision, or not change the county's method, but continue with traditional supervision, but put a twist to it with culturally specific services. One of the twists of the process at that point in time was hiring an individual, his name was Terrell Johnson, who had been in the system for multiple years as a counselor. He got his life together and started working towards becoming a counselor and mentoring and counseling individuals coming out of the system, out of the prison system that he had once spent time in, So with him at hand, working with these individuals and the program being designed based on culturally specific behaviors and looking at the criminal justice system as kind of a culture in itself, these guys have been used to going in and out of the system, so he had a clear understanding of that whole process.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, as he transitioned on to do other things with the county, a gentleman named Harrison Downey was one of the individuals that was very aggressive in his pursuit of continuing the counseling process and his experience with the system and also being hired with the county to work with these individuals. As I came along in 2000, we started to work. I was working with Harrison, and the gentleman named Don Allen, that kind of took his place as he transitioned out, took his place as a PO. It taught me some of the ropes of working with these guys and some of the things that they had done, going inside the prisons on Wednesday nights, conducting educational groups, teaching African-American history inside the prisons, Columbia River mm-hmm. Correctional Institution. The parole officers, two parole officers, and one corrections counselor. And what they did is the individuals participating for the program or applying for the program was solely voluntary on the inside. So when they were released from prison, the parole officers and the counselors that were inside were actually the ones that were going to work with them in the community.
Mm-hmm.
So what we did was, what they did was formed a line of continuity. The parole officers inside and outside, as well the individuals inside, the inmates at that time coming out as offenders, would have a relationship, a form of a relationship built with the individuals working with them prior to them getting released from prison.
Mm-hmm.
So,
one of the things that I'm sort of proud of is the fact that, you know, I'm on the CRCI, Columbia River Correctional Institution Advisory Board, and one of the things we obviously are concerned about is the disproportionate amount of African Americans involved in the criminal justice system. When you say a culturally specific, how do you or how did you design, or what is some of your strengths, and I'll probably pose this to you, Travis, what are some of the strengths that you bring to a culturally specific program such as the one that you're involved in?
Well, I'd have to say, growing up in the neighborhood that I grew up in, having a close relationship with individuals who, have been in the system, having family members myself that have been in the system, it was the reason why I chose to go into this field in the first place, was to try to share my personal experiences and hopefully try to help people, who quite honestly look like me.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was really one of the, I thought that I had something to bring from my personal experience. And for my education as well, just the way that you communicate with people, knowing the dynamics of African American families because I come from one,
mm-hmm.
just issues like that. And I say this all the time when we talk about this. Just being African American doesn't make you an expert on African American, but certainly with my experience, I'm able to relate information to people, on a variety of different levels.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what a lot of this is about, is being able to really relate to people and get them the information that they need
mm-hmm.
in order to make the changes for people who really want to change.
Mm-hmm.
They're really thirsty for that information. Because if an individual has been doing something for a long time now, I want to change, but how do I change?
Mm-hmm.
So just being open and being able to communicate to individuals about the process of change, the stages of change,
mm-hmm.
and that type of stuff. So I think that's been, that's really all of our strengths, is that ability to communicate. This is the change process, and if you really want to change, here's a process that you can use to do that.
Mm-hmm. Stages of change is something I'm familiar with, involved with the drug and alcohol field, and we often talk about stages of change. I know Dorothy, she works with the female component?
No, actually, I work with the men's component primarily.
Oh, okay.
But I do some work with the women, too, mm-hmm. as needed, mm-hmm. Primarily the men.
Okay. One of the things when you talk about stages of change and things of that nature, obviously there's a lot of, I don't know if you would say, bad feelings toward the criminal justice system itself in terms of how it relates to African Americans, the disproportionate amount of African Americans, and then, of course, society itself. I was listening to Margaret Carter today talking about at the Emanuel Church talking about that there's still segregation in Oregon, economic segregation. How do you sensitize, I guess, the population that you work with, or how do you get them to look past that? What are some of the techniques that you use?
Well, one of the things we try to concentrate on is getting an individual to see himself in the system. And what I mean by that is there are any number of reasons why people make the choices that they make and wind up in the system. I mean, we can say there's socioeconomical reasons for people to make certain choices, get involved in criminal behavior. But one of the things we try to do is get individuals to concentrate on the choices that they made to get into the system, number one, the choices that they need to make to stay out of the system. And you said something very important about people's perception of the system. A lot of these individuals have been in the system for a long time, and they haven't had good experience with the system. A lot of them haven't had good experiences with parole officers, with police officers, that type of thing. But we still try to concentrate on their responsibility, the choices that they make, and how those choices can affect change in their life. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the best things about this program is going into the institution and meeting with people before they get out. It kind of takes away some of that fear of, you know, who am I going to get this time? Who's my parole officer going to be? Well, you know, if it's going to be that guy, I'm just going to start running right off the bat. And some people, because people talk when they're in the institution, they talk about, well, I had this guy. They don't normally talk about the mistakes that they made, but right. They talk about
word of mouth.
Right, word of mouth. I had this PO. Oh, man, you don't want him. You don't want to deal with him. And so I think us going into the institutions and Diane going into the institution and Dorothy going into the institution, it starts to break down because we are a part of the system.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people have issues with the system, but we are a part of the system. And so we kind of extend that olive branch in a way,
mm-hmm,
to say, hey, look, you know, here we are. We're here to help you if you want to help yourself. And I think that helps a lot to break down some of those mm-hmm, perceptions.
I attended one of the meetings at the Lutheran Church, I believe is where you conduct your weekly meetings. And Dorothy, I think one of the things that I've gotten from you at these meetings is precisely, you know, I'm from the African American community myself, obviously, and one of the things we used to say is, man, don't get a black PO. Don't get a, you know, a black could be worse, harder on you than a white cop, or a black PO be harder than. And I think Dorothy goes a long way to kind of change that perception, or to change that image in her approach. Is that something that you consciously aware of, Dorothy, or is that something that you consciously strive to do?
Well, I don't think I consciously strive to do that, but I believe that people are going to make change based upon how they interact with other people. And so, I mean, it's a part of how we do group. I mean, people have to be responsible for their behavior, and what better place to do that than in a group setting where they can be with their peers and can express themselves in the way they need to express themselves. And usually in that group process, people, I guess, self-regulate. You know, they find out that they have some strengths that maybe they didn't even know they had, and which leaves me with not having to do a whole lot, but ask questions and try and develop the the change in belief and the system.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay. What are some of the, Nate, you can talk about what are some of the, what were some of your initial goals? And a lot of times I know it takes a long time for us to gauge the success or failure of any program. What are some of your, what were some of the initial goals and what are some of your goals now?
Well, regarding race relations and stuff and these guys getting out of the institution and staying out of the institution, the program's design was for recidivism. We want to focus on discontinuing the return to prison for these young men. And how we did that was by giving them information about the process, the numbers, the large numbers of them going into the institution in the beginning, and also the numbers of them returning to the institutions. We also have conversations with them specifically regarding their what you talked about earlier was race. Their getting a white PO versus a black PO and dealing with the system the way it is. A lot of that comes up quite a bit. Racial tension, racial disparity in the system. What we do is we don't try to change their minds. We want them to have a different perspective. We try to give them a wider view on what this process is all about. Some of the things we say, I believe we have pretty much the same messages. Some of the things we say to them regarding being in the system, whether it's a racist system or not, is that you're in the system for committing a crime. We look at the criminality, and our goals are to get them to understand that their behavior is what got them where they are, regardless of who arrested them or what judge sentenced them or the color of those individuals. Mm-hmm. Their behavior got them where they are. So mm-hmm. we focus specifically on behavior, and our solid message is you need to get out of here and stay out of here. Mm-hmm. We're going to try to put things in your lives, skills and abilities and activities in your life and people in your lives that are going to help you do this. Our goal is to see them get out and stay out. So my initial goal mm-hmm. and my excitement about it is that we have the same message. We're pretty aggressive in putting that message forward with these individuals. And I believe we haven't deviated too far from the message that was put forth from the very beginning of this program. I mean, we picked up the fire and we're running with it right mm-hmm. across. Right on the
road. And in a sentence or so, what was the message given at the very beginning of the program?
What was the message given?
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know.
Well,
you know,
we're trying to do things in a non-traditional method. We're trying to supervise them in a non-traditional manner in which will help them succeed. We're trying to instill some black pride primarily.
Mm-hmm.
We want them to feel proud about who they are and where they came from, regardless of what it was. Mm-hmm. Their history is their history, and we can't change that. Mm-hmm. But you can, from this point on, from the time you start to work with us, from the time you start to go through the change process, you can do better in your life. You can get out of the system and make something of yourself.
Diane Wade has just joined us, and she's also a member of this dynamic African-American program. And we want to welcome her to the KBO microphones and ask her some questions as well about. Now, do you deal with the female population, Diane?
Yes, I work with the gender-specific population.
The gender-specific. One of the things that gets me, and I want to know, I guess my question is directed to how much flexibility do your supervisors give you? Because one of the things, I'm also a chaplain for Multnomah County, and I've been in CRCI, I believe it's CRCI, and also MCDC in Inverness. And one of the things I can't understand is the movies they let the inmates see. I mean, why, if somebody's incarcerated, why do you want to show them Scarface? Do y'all have any kind of, I can't understand that. Can somebody help me understand? I mean, here you guys are out here in the trenches. You're trying to change some negative kind of a habit. What kind of sense does it make to have movies that is not conducive to the work that you guys are doing? So do y'all have any kind of?
Well, I first want to say that I cannot speak for the Department of Corrections. But what I can say for the African American program is we do screen the movies that we watch.
that we show to our groups. We also challenge some of the movies that they watch on their own time. For example, two of the movies that came up in the women's group the other night was American Pimp and Pimps Up Hoes Down.
Oh my.
One of my clients found that to be completely entertaining. But it was a documentary about the lifestyle of pimps and prostitutes, and we challenged that thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, the class was Effective Black Parenting, and what we've been teaching is that you can only give your kids what you have. And if you want to raise healthy African-American mm-hmm. kids, mm-hmm. you got to look at yourself.
Mm-hmm.
This woman prides herself in being a pimp. The child's father was a pimp, currently incarcerated. His father was a pimp, so this is a long line of pimps and prostitutes. And we challenged her thinking, is this what you want for your son?
Mm-hmm.
So we challenged the thinking of that. How does that promote pride in blackness?
Mm-hmm.
How does that honor the heritage, strong cultural heritage that we come from?
Mm-hmm.
So, again, I can't speak for the Department of Corrections, but I can say that in this program, we definitely show good culturally specific movies.
That makes sense to me because, you know, even if the Department of Corrections, and I know you can't speak for the Department of Corrections, but I think that somebody at some point has to hold them accountable. If we're looking at reducing the recidivism, if we're looking at reducing the impact of incarceration on the African-American community. But that makes sense to me. If you know, if you no matter what kind of movie you show, if we can process it afterwards and show the negative type, the negative stereotype, then to me that makes sense. I know that, and please feel free to any one of you answer the question, because I know I was reading the brochure that Nate Roberts was so kind enough to fax me today in preparation for this program, and I know that one of the admission criteria is a letter. Someone has to write a letter requesting, and perhaps you can give us a sense of what are some of the other criteria as well. But within that context, can you address what specifically do you look for in that letter? I mean, suppose somebody, you know, unfortunately, in my travels with those that are incarcerated, a lot of them, unfortunately, can't write.
That's right. So
the
letter is not the important piece. If they, in their writing this letter, express a wish to be in the African-American program, then what we do is we process, you know, what their criminal history was and so forth, because there are some parameters.
But
we know that many people have difficulty writing,
mm-hmm.
difficulty expressing themselves verbally. So what we do is we don't put a whole lot of emphasis mm-hmm. on that. What we try and do, though, is to interview people. And I can speak for the men's program.
Mm-hmm.
After they have come to CRCI and are there, we interview them and make sure that this is a program that they're appropriate for, and we mm-hmm. meet their needs and they're meeting our needs.
Mm-hmm. One of the objectives, I was looking through the brochure on the African American program is reduce, and it totally, I mean, it's something that obviously has to be addressed, is a decrease in drug and alcohol use. How do you approach that?
Well, we all have some experience working within the system with alcoholism and drug addiction. A few of us have been certified counselors. We address those issues in the beginning in the institution with the women's program and the men's program. How we address it is, once they're out, we make referrals. We have guidelines within the parameters of our job as parole officers that we have to go by. There's orders that special conditions they have to apply to, so we get orders indicating that they have to have evaluations and possible treatment. If guys have been locked up for a long period of time, in most cases, their treatment condition is in remission. So what they'll have to do initially is get an alcohol and drug assessment when they get out. Our goal as a unit is to talk to them specifically about where they're at, try to identify what their problem is and the nature of their problem, and to help them see it and to talk about it so they can have the desire to help themselves arrest their addiction. Mm-hmm. So we use a system that we are that's already in place, realistically, because we have other things to do. But we have many different topics within the guidelines of this program in the curricula that we focus on the addiction, the behavior mm-hmm. of the addiction, and the change process. Mm-hmm. So,
And if I could just speak to that, one of the questions that you asked when I walked in was, at the beginning of this program, what was kind of the mission statement, or what was the focus?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we would all agree that we tell our clients, it's time for you to start taking some responsibility for your life.
Mm-hmm.
So when we do work with clients who have alcohol and drug issues, we'll give them two options, or I definitely will give them two options. I can take you to jail, which is the traditional way of supervision, or you can choose to do something about your addiction and go to treatment. Mm-hmm. Whatever the case may be, I'm willing to serve you in those areas. Mm-hmm. And most of the time they say, okay, I want to go to treatment.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to stay the first time, complete the program, and live happily ever after. They may have to go through a program two or three or four or five or ten times, mm-hmm. but they're going to make the choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, that's one of the arguments that I use a lot. I can say, you can engage in treatment. Otherwise, I know a foolproof abstinence program. So the choice is yours. You want to do that program outside of the jail or inside the jail. So, yes, Diane, I wanted to just while you're on the microphone, while you got the microphone, because you mentioned you're gender specific, and I know that you work with the female, the female component of this program, and at some point maybe one of you can address, is there much difference between the female and the male component? But I did want to ask, before we get to that, being that you're dealing with the females of the community that enrolls in this program, families, and I know, you know, I could see, just looking at you, I can imagine how you feel when a woman comes in your program, she has little children,
mm-hmm.
you know, and she misses those children, and she's facing this time in the criminal justice system, and it's her involvement in the criminal justice system.
Mm-hmm.
Do you involve the family? We know that that's a strong part of treatment. Mm-hmm. Do you involve the family and the
Definitely.
Children, and how do you do that?
Well, I'll say that any good PO is well aware that they're not a one-man team, and that if you can engage with the families, moms, in most cases the grandmothers, have taken over the role of parenting because the father is not around, the mom's in prison. If you can engage with them, and by engaging I mean get them to buy into what you're trying to do to effect change, that's going to be the bulk of your work. They're going to call you when, you know, Jane Doe is not home at her curfew, or when she's out using, or when she's not caring for her kids. And that's, they're going to be your eyes in the community. And I think it's very important, you know, in the African-American community, it's just that. It's a community. I told my supervisor, I said, the African-American community is very small. You know, if you didn't go to school with them, you're friends with them, your family's with them, or, you know, you certainly know them from somewhere. So definitely I engage the families, and they help me do the bulk of my job.
Mm-hmm. Now, are all of you parole officers?
No.
Okay. Is this Dorothy that's going to be coming to the microphone?
Yes.
Are you a parole officer?
No, I'm not. I'm a corrections counselor.
Corrections counselor.
Right. So I don't have I can't do some of the things that the parole officers, quite frankly,
bring
can do.
The hammer down. Well, they know when you call Nate over or Travis that something's going on.
Something's going on, right?
Okay, I kind of get it. And Diane, are you parole officer? Okay, we're going to take a short break here on KBOO. I have with me today Travis Gamble, Nate Roberts, and Diane Wade. They're parole officers, and adult and probation and parole officers. For the Multnomah County Department of Community Justice, the African American Program, and also I have with me Dorothy Steele, who is a corrections counselor with the Multnomah County Department of Community Justice. So we'll be right back. And if you have any phone calls for these delightful people, please give us a call here at 231-8187, 231-8187. And we'll be right back with more on transition from incarceration to freedom. Stay with us. Keiko Matsui here on KBOO 90.7 FM Community Radio. I'm Shahid Hamid here with Proverbial Perspectives. My guest today is Mr. Travis Gamble and Nate Roberts, Diane Wade, adult probation and parole officers for the Multnomah County Department of Community Justice, and also Dorothy Steele. And she's a corrections counselor with the Multnomah County Department of Community Justice, and they're doing a fine job. And I'm talking, and we're talking about the program, a culturally specific program designed specifically for African Americans, and on parole or probation, and they do excellent work with some of the things that that they've designed, and we're going to talk about. If you have a question about anything related to this topic, please give us a call here at KBOO 503-231-8187. We are very interested in those who are incarcerated, because as we all know, there's a disproportionate amount of African-American minorities, Latinos, in the criminal justice system. And so we really want to do what we can to highlight what's going on, and things of that nature. So when we talk about culturally specific, do you have Latino, because I just mentioned Latino, do we have a Latino program like this, or is it just the African-American program?
At this point in time, we just have the African-American program that we know of that goes inside the institution and do what we do. So the program,
okay, I think we have a call, and Diane, you might have to. Do you have any headphones over there? Okay, all right. Well, just change for some when you see we're going to get on the air. I think we have a call. Let's see if we can get somebody on the air. K-Boo, you're on the air. Question or comment?
Good evening. Question and comment. Hello, Shahid, and
hey, Ray Bob.
Show. Hello, board. All your guests. Shahid, you know me, Reggae Bob, and I've been taking over the prison show here on the air last couple of weeks. Question for your panel of guests. Oftentimes I get letters about the parole board and from prisoners who are on lockdown, and they say the parole board is a very, very big problem of them not being able to be released. They feel they've done everything they needed to do to get parole, and they're often denied. And I'm driving my car. I'll take what you can. Answer off the air, please.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Ray Bob. Anybody respond to that?
I'll say this. Well, what I'll say about that is, as parole officers, we have to remember, particularly with the African-American program, that we are guests in the house of the Department of Corrections. We are ambassadors of the court as parole officers and of the parole board. Our focus is to make sure, ensure, and facilitate the offenders getting off supervision and staying off supervision. We don't have any power over the parole board, but we certainly can help them get out and stay out if they're willing to put in the work. I mean, once the orders come from the parole board, we, as ambassadors, we have to make sure they abide by those conditions.
And I know that sometimes can be pretty tough, because on one hand, you have to, again, respect, I mean, it's your job. And on the other hand, you know, people may want you to try to pull some strings so they can do this or to do that. And so you're kind of walking a kind of fine line at various times.
Yes, so it all goes back to them taking responsibility for their life. I know that the women are based out of Coffee Creek Correctional Institution, and the management over there has been wonderful and welcoming to have us come in and start the African-American program. However, we still remember that we're guests in the house of the Department of Corrections.
Now, that's a different – that's with the state. Now, you're with the county.
Yes.
And Coffee Creek is a state institution.
Yes, that's where the women are primarily housed.
Right, right. One of the things that I was looking through, Travis, perhaps maybe you can address this, or Dorothy. I was looking through your brochure. Everything looks beautiful. I did have one question, particularly looking at the African-American experience in this country and the African-American heritage. And that is the, and I didn't see it, but maybe you can help me with this. I didn't see the spiritual piece. I know you were talking about drugs and alcohol reduction, and you mentioned something about referral. I didn't hear anything about 12-step programs. I didn't hear anything about uses of the spiritual concept or the spiritual approach to not only dealing with reduction in drug and alcohol use, but we're talking about reducing parole violations, eliminate stopping domestic violence, dealing with eliminating criminal activities, things of that nature, breaking cycle of self-defeat, strengthening the family. It seems like there would be something recognizing our history from this culturally specific approach to include the black church or spirituality in and of itself.
A lot of times, in addressing the topics that we address, there aren't too many topics that we don't touch on some type of spirituality. Spirituality comes from the participants themselves. You know, we talk about ancient African wisdom, and that's kind of a spiritual base. We don't promote, of course, any particular traditional.
I understand there's no promotion of religion, but spirituality is
the spirituality permeates the whole curriculum.
Yeah. Well, I didn't see anything in the brochure, so that's why I was just curious. But we got a couple of calls here, and I know I can talk forever, but I know the folks may want to talk with you, and you may get some real good insight from a lot of our listeners here. KBOO, you're on the air. Your question or comment, please. KBOO, you're on the air. Your question or comment?
Well, yes. I would like to comment on the situation that I would like to know how much money is spent on putting people behind bars and how much money is the government spending on actually educating, for example, Latinos that come into this country about the rules they have to follow, and instead of just sending them to Yale, like telling, look, in this country you cannot drink and drive. In this country you cannot do this because mm-hmm. it's illegal and this is what will happen to you.
Mm-hmm.
Any information about that? Because I see that there's a lot of money spent after they're in jail, but there is no money spent like on education to avoid sending people to jail.
Okay, thank you so much. Yeah, we'll take your question over there. Thank you. Anybody would like to address that? I know we're not a Latino necessarily dealing with those issues, but
I would just have to say that I really couldn't give you a dollar amount on what is spent on incarceration versus education, trying to prevent incarceration. I can't give you a dollar amount, but I am pretty sure that there's a lot more money spent on incarceration than there is on education. Primarily in this country, people are expected to educate themselves on a lot of these issues, educate themselves on what the laws are, what the rules are, no different than if you go to get a driver's license and you read the D pamphlet, you learn all the rules of the road, you learn that type of stuff. And I know that there are laws being made, you know, on a yearly basis. Sometimes there's new laws that come up that people aren't aware of. But
mm-hmm.
I think that is something that primarily is up to the individual to educate themselves on. I don't see the system, other than doing public service announcements and that type of stuff sometime, I don't see them making a concerted effort to...
I remember they used to talk about there was more African Americans in jail than there was in college at some specific age level. Let's take another call. KBOO, you're on the air. Your question or comment, please.
Thank you. Is my radio level okay?
Yes.
Thank you. I see a serious flaw to this attempt to change a very seriously unwanted condition in the non-white community, and I think that flaw is the very people like the parole officers and parole officers are perpetuating the status quo of the criminal justice citizen.
How so?
The very first basic way is by distinguishing between African-American and Latino. People, for example, these people will be separated in prison, separated from each other. The corrupt prison officials will take advantage of that to cause dissension, division, and animosity between the groups, and there's absolutely no reason why there has to be an African-American group. It could very well be non-white group, because that's the way the statistic of prison population lines up. Mm-hmm. It lines up to be white and non-white.
Okay.
And so that should be changed right away. It should be a non-white group. It should include a Latino component and an Asian component as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But it should not be, we're doing this for African Americans, no matter what your personal motivation is.
Okay.
And then you could expect to have a much better effect.
Okay. I think that probably was more of a statement than a question, but we'll let someone, one of our panelists, answer it. Thank you for your call. Diane, would you care to? That one's just made for you.
Okay, let me say this. I certainly appreciate your comment. And believe it or not, this is not the first time we've had this comment, but I will say this. I think that sometimes people tend to look at the smaller picture and what do we need to do inside of the jail. Our focus, the African American program, our focus, first of all, is not to be exclusive, but inclusive. And what I mean by that is when we have our outside groups, people are welcome to bring their friends, their families, their significant others who are not all African American. The other thing is I want you to be clear that our goal is to help African American people get off supervision and stay off supervision. If we can achieve that goal, we don't have to worry about what kind of movies they're showing in DOC, how much money they're paying to incarcerate them. We don't have to worry about all that because they're not going to be incarcerated, mm-hmm. and they can choose their own movies. So I want that to be clear. That's our goal.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that write letters to be a part of the African American program, for the most part, it's their goal too.
Mm-hmm.
They are struggling with what it takes to get there mm-hmm. because of the history that they've had.
Mm-hmm.
Our job is to help facilitate that change.
Mm-hmm. You know, you always hear that type of argument being put forth, like even with affirmative action,
mm-hmm.
you know. Well, why do you have to make special rules for the African American? You can put him in with everybody, you know, and that's not necessarily reflective of the history taken into consideration, as you put out our history. You know, they didn't have Latinos in the boats with us when we came over here. I mean, you know, not to say that, of course, we partner with them and we are very, very sensitive to their needs and advocate for their needs. At various junctions in the community, but I do think that there's a need for a specific program looking at the incarceration rates and the disproportionate amount of African Americans and incarcerated, not to mention the laws that are to some extent people feel are not in accord with. With, you know, like, say, if somebody from the West Hills is caught with powder cocaine and somebody from Beach and Failing is caught with rock cocaine, they get more time, you know. So the criminal justice system needs to be looked at, but you know, I'm certainly glad that there's programs such as yours to address some of these inconsistencies. And I know probably this guy calling back, but we're going to take a call and see. Cable, you on there?
Yes.
Told you.
Unless you intend to not allow me to speak, which I will acquiesce to, it's fine, but I'd like to respond.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Go ahead. Just don't take a whole lot of time.
I didn't before. It's true. Everything that you're saying is true, but not to the exclusion. I know the sister said that everyone is welcome, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But when you call it the African American program, you automatically exclude certain people. It's not necessary to do that. If African-American people seek and address and aid African-American people and along with that seek and aid other people, people will know that it's an African-American program. There's no doubt about that. As a matter of fact, as soon as you start making some progress, you're going to find a lot of opposition to the group. So I agree with everything that you're saying, but we have to cop to our shortcomings. Like, we
I don't know what that is.
You don't know what our shortcomings are?
No, not in the sense of we can't specifically address something for African Americans. No.
No. I don't say that we can't do it, but I'm saying in this case it's not necessary.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, it's not necessary for us.
Well,
to
wait
say,
a minute. Okay.
Just one sentence. It's not necessary for us to say drugs and alcohol. Instead of saying drugs, which includes alcohol, or drugs
well,
including
a lot of
alcohol.
People, a lot of people don't know that.
That's why it's your job, since you're taking this personally, to share with people some things that you know.
I'm not taking it personally. I'm just educating. But listen, we want to let this people. We want to let some other folks.
Okay.
Know.
Goodbye now. Thank you.
Thank you.
I think it's important to remember that the reason the African American program is in place is because of the research that showed that we were overrepresented in the criminal justice system. And so the program is a direct result of a response to that research about a specific group mm-hmm. of individuals which happened to be African American. So certainly the program doesn't look to exclude anyone, but specific research was done for a specific group and mm-hmm. a program designed to assist that specific group mm-hmm. because a problem was identified, which was overrepresentation mm-hmm. in every aspect of the criminal justice
yeah.
system. So it's important to remember that it's not about excluding everyone else, but it's dealing with a clearly identified problem.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Nate, you want to respond?
Yeah, in conjunction to what Travis was saying, if people were to, and this is available to everybody, look at the demographics of institution, look at the demographics regarding incarceration, if they were to look at that, they'd see that we have one of the highest rates of return to prison in the country, all over the country. So that would help an individual be okay with us having a program to focus specifically on addressing the issue of African-American men and women and children going to the institutions at a higher rate than any other ethnic group in the country.
Mm.
It makes it more simple for
you. You know, just let me say this, that this program is dedicated to issues directly or indirectly related to African Americans. You know, why is that needed? Look upon the media's horizon. Which programs, which stations are dealing with any specific issues related to African Americans? And it really boggles my mind when people say, well, you're not, just by doing that, you're not being inclusive. No. I mean, you know, we're here at a community radio station pushing community. In fact, we want people to be more community and be more inclusive of us. One of the things, being a member of a former member of the Nation of Islam, we used to get that a lot. Well, why is it just for black people? Why is it, you know, why isn't it for everybody? Well, we needed some work done on us. Is the answer. And now that we looked at New Orleans, as far as I'm concerned, I feel totally justified in being a Muslim because look at that kind of situation in terms of how many people is affected. So we being inclusive inside Katrina, but don't get me started. Anyway, let me just say, before we go, we only got one more question or so, but I just want to thank all of you for taking time out of your schedule to come down and address this issue, and hopefully at some point we can do some further programs on this. I also do a program on Portland Cable Access, and perhaps we can at some point, because this is important. When we look at the community, when we look at our youth, and that's one of the questions I really wanted to ask you, is there a youth component for something like this? Because we have so many of our young people gang banging, doing all kinds of things, and this is probably something that really needs to be done in conjunction with, like, the Oregon Youth Authority or something of that nature. Maybe, Diane, you can speak to that. I mean, is there anything that the youth are involved in or that y'all are directing toward the youth?
Well, I will say our supervisor, Shabman Afzal, is incredible. With him at the helm, we've started the women's program. We don't have a youth program specifically, but some of the things that we will do is if we know that there are youth in the community who are struggling, we will have them, male or female, sit in on the adult outside groups and do like an intervention. We have a juvenile Measure 11 caseload in our office, and we're working on some mentorship stuff. So definitely we have made ourselves available for the youth. But to say that there's a specific youth component, we haven't established that yet.
Mm-hmm. Travis.
Yeah, I'll say one of the kind of natural progressions of this program is we do have some graduates of the AAP program who've gone on to work with youth in the community specifically. And some of those individuals are ex-gang members and that type of thing. And so the work that they do now, some of them actually work within the system, within the criminal justice system that they were incarcerated in.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the work that they do is just wonderful in outreach and working with the youth in the community because they know them. They know their families. They know their, mm-hmm. their history. And they're real familiar with that lifestyle because they've been in it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would say right now our youth component really is comprised of some of the graduates of the program who are really doing well in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And two of our graduates, I just want to put a plug in for them really quick, Pernell and Ashley Brown. Pernell works primarily with the men. Ashley Brown is the corrections counselor for the gender-specific African-American program. And Carl Rucker works with the Youth Gang Task Force. They are our heroes.
Mm-hmm.
They help us. They work with us. We can count on them. And in most cases, a lot of what we do, we wouldn't be able to if it weren't for them walking with us and helping us get through stuff.
Well, we certainly want to, again, thank you for the work that you're doing. And I'm sorry we didn't get it, because that was one of my questions I wanted to ask, because I know you can sing your praises about a number of your accomplishments. And a lot of times we don't hear about enough accomplishments and don't hear about enough positive things coming out of the community. And I know that y'all have done a lot of positive work, a lot of work that people aren't doing and aren't volunteering to do and not with respect to the community. So again, I want to thank each and every one of you. I want to thank you, Travis Gamble. Did you want to say something else?
I just wanted to say kind of along those lines, it's really wonderful to actually work for Multnomah County. This is the only program like this in the country. And being in a community with such a small percentage of black people, and we've traveled around to other places and presented this program, and we've been to places where there's a much higher population of black people and they don't have a program like this. And so it's just really wonderful to actually work in an organization that sees value in something like this, even though we're only talking about a small percentage of the population.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just wanted to say that.
Okay. Well, again, I want to thank you both for your time and the effort that you've put, that you've done, and all of you, the wonderful work. And that's, again, Travis Gamble, Nate Roberts, Diane Wade, their parole and probation and parole officers for the Multnomah County Department of Community Justice, and Dorothy Steele. And she's a counselor, a corrections counselor for Multnomah County Department of Community Justice. Keep up the good work. If there's anything that we can do, if you ever need a microphone, you're always welcome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay. Yours truly, Shahid Hamid, for Proverbial Perspectives. And until the first Thursday of next month, yours truly, wishing you peace. And I'm out.